What the EFL? It's the Independent Football League podcast. Once a week, every week, we're in your ears, bringing you all the latest from the EFL. On this episode, QPR take a kneel, Manning down at the Dons, Preston North End, Blackburn's winning home run, Ipswich look to have the X-Tractor in League One, whilst the most common result in League Two was Team AP, Team BP, as the big chill set in. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. We're back again then, team, for another delve into the world of the Football League. The Championship return proper this weekend, so that helps you get over the misery of England's World Cup exit. I'm Matt Davis-Adams. Adrian Clark and Sam Parkin are here with me today. How are you doing, Adrian?
Hello. Yeah, very good, thank you. Yeah, all good. No snow in the Midlands, which is, a bit weird when I'm watching all the scenes down in Sam's neck of the woods.
Yeah, I like dusting. At best, in the Vale of Beaver. How about you, Sam? Knee deep in it?
I was trying to think of the terminology first thing this morning when I looked out of the blinds. More than a dusting, less than something you could calculate in inches, I would go for.
What's the fuss about? Yeah.
Just enough to be a pain.
Little bit of movement on the tyres during reversing out the front of the house, yeah. But nothing to worry about.
Well, there were loads of postponements this weekend, but there was plenty for us to get our teeth into. We'll do that soon. Let's just give another mention, though, to the offer that our partners Quinbet have set up for you for the World Cup. To coincide with the World Cup, the guys at Quinbet have enhanced their UK welcome offer where you can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It's for new customers that sign up only. Head to www.quinbet.com/world-cup-2022-offer-UK. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions. It's 18 plus, and remember, always gamble responsibly. Okay, we're going to start today with some news. Neil Critchley's in at QPR then, Sam. Your team, 3.5-year deal for him, replacing Mick Beale after he walked out a few months ago. What are your initial thoughts on it?
I think pleased, yeah. I think it's a sensible appointment when you think of the previous two managers, the way that they've tried to play. The way that they've tried to sign players, I think it fits that mould. So I think it makes sense. I think, obviously, we're fortunate to cover the league, so we're familiar with his work previously. The more casual armchair fan, I suppose QPR on the telly enough to call them that. I heard that on Football Clichés the other day. But they'll be a little bit underwhelmed, I would imagine. But I think this is a guy who clearly knows what he's doing. I wouldn't say that it was as easy on the eye, his football at Blackpool, as, say, Mick Beale's football, but it's a coach who obviously does his best work on the training ground, working with the players, improving young players. So for that point, and that point only, I think it's continuity. I see it as a positive for QPR. It has to be a bigger plan over a number of seasons.
Adrian, I thought his quotes on the Rangers website were absolutely textbook stuff from a new manager. How about this? I'm very excited and can't wait to get started. It's a huge honour for me, and I'd like to thank the owners, Les Ferdinand and Lee Hoos, for entrusting me to lead the club. I'd also like to thank Paul Hall and his staff for the hard work they've put in during the interim period. Now I'm looking forward to getting to work with the players and staff. I mean, he's just ticked every box there.
He didn't write it, did he? Let's be honest. He just said, look, just put out a generic for me. Is that all right? I haven't really got time. So I would echo Sam's thoughts on it. I think sensible is the word, the key word here. I think, yeah, he fits the mould. I think he'll work well with the players that he's got. Good with young players. Great connection, obviously, with young players from his time at Liverpool. He's got good contacts in the game. And what I think is sensible as well here is the fact that he did ditch Blackpool. He did kind of fail. He was part of the failure at Aston Villa. So this is a guy that needs this job, and he needs to do well in the job, and he needs to probably stick around to prove he's not a walker. A little bit, you know, like Michael Appleton earlier on in his career, he had that reputation, did well, moved on. And I don't think Critchley will want that. So, I think, I'm not saying he's going to see out the 3.5 years, but he's someone that I think will stick around if providing he's doing a decent job.
It's almost as if Mick Beale's only kind of, well, if he'd got a top Premier League offer, he probably would have gone. But that Glasgow Rangers thing would have been in the back of his mind and would have always been something that he would have taken. You know, Neil Critchley has got a really good job here. QPR's a brilliant club, and this is a good period to be there, I suppose, when they are having a bit of continuity. So, yeah, I'd be very surprised if it's him walking to get a better gig. It's more likely that he'll get something because they don't get the results. So I don't see Lightning striking twice. I see it as a good appointment. There was always that risk attached to Mick Beall because of his connection to Glasgow Rangers, which obviously can pay him a few more quid and give him the lure of Champions League nights.
Yeah, I said it was months ago Mick Beall left. Obviously, it wasn't. It was weeks. But I did like the shade that QPR chairman Amit Bhatia threw Beall's way during his part of the statement following the abrupt departure of Mick Beall. So lovely.
It had to be done, though, didn't it? It was managerial shithousery, wasn't it? It was. Yeah, he gave it such a big one about staying and about being loyal. So he deserves all the flack he gets.
He's got work to do, Sam Neil Critchley, hasn't he, based on what happened against Burnley on Sunday? I know Burnley are the table toppers, but it was a rather one-sided affair at Loftus Road.
Oh, mate, he's walking into a difficult job straight away. I mean, they're a shadow of the side from earlier in the season. No wins in seven now. Desperate for Ilias Chair to come back. I think that's as clear as day. Willock got taken off at half-time yesterday. Tactical decision from Paul Hall. Obviously, they've had loads of joy playing those kind of two narrow number 10s with the full-backs bombing on, but he felt they needed more width in the real offensive areas, so he put on two wingers and sacrificed Willock. So that shows you where his form is right now. I don't know if he's had his head turned or if he's just been curtailed by the injury and missing a few games, but yeah, that's a huge worry. And when I see, with no disrespect to the individuals, George Thomas starting for QPR, Albert Adoma coming on at half-time. I mean, this is not a top six
side. Is he still there, Albert Adoma? Yeah. Crikey, he's older
than me. Uncle Albert's still there. I see Rob Dickey on the bench, and that's, for me, has been a head-scratcher all season. And I think Mick Beall preferred playing the four, but I think you've got to get him back involved. And you've got Taylor Richards as well, who we've spoken about a few times on this podcast in previous seasons. He's there. Seen him come on and affect games. Yeah, there's a few decisions I'm not sure about right now. Shadipo and Adoma came on yesterday. You know, I don't think those two players are going to get QPR where they want to be this season. So, yeah, he's got a big job on his hands. And yesterday was a canter for Burnley. But we got to mention the quality of the finishing was incredible. The free kick and then the first one from Mattson. That's an unbelievably controlled kind of strike when it was easy to blaze that into the loft. So no, credit to them, they're motoring, and the referee was terrible. So cheers, refs, this weekend. Times two.
Yeah, can't be as bad as that Brazilian fella in Qatar. Last thing on Critchley, I appreciated the swiftness with which QPR changed their Twitter bio. By 1934 on Sunday, it was Neil Critchley's Blue and White Army. So they are bang on it and they're giving him all their support, which, Adrian, you cannot say for MK Dons and Liam Manning, because he has been sacked. This after the Dons 2-1 home defeat by Fleetwood. He was the next big thing last season, took them to the playoffs after a third place finish, but he leaves with them 23rd in the table, 15 points from 20 matches, only won one of their past 11 games. Is it that heady cocktail of playoff heartbreak plus losing Scott Twine, Harry Darling et al. That's done for him? Should he have been given a bit more time?
Oh, I just don't know, because it has been a terrible season. He can't shy away from that. They've been poor. MK Dons, definitely a shadow of their former selves. But he did prove last season that he's a smart coach that can combine winning football with attractive football that's the so-called MK Dons way. So I would like them to have stuck with him, but I also, looking at the league table, you can't blame them for making a change. What I would say is that if you take out Matt O'Reilly, who left in January, of course, last year, Scott Twine and Harry Darling out of a team at that level, and don't replace them with players of equal quality, then you're not going to be as good. It is as simple as that. I think then the recruitment was not great. They took a risk on a number of players that weren't proven at the level. He's not entirely in charge of recruitment, or he wasn't, Liam Manning, by the way. It's they've got a performance director, or sporting director, whatever they want to call it, in Liam Sweeting, who kind of makes those calls. So I would imagine that he will be under a little bit of pressure in January as well, because they didn't bring in the requisite quality last summer to help the manager. So I feel sorry for Liam Manning, but I like to think that he's done enough to get another crack at League One or League Two level, because I think the signs of real promise there last season.
I think it's going to be interesting to see where he lands next. Lots of criticism, Sam, from Don's supporters for the chairman, Pete Winkelmann. Winkelmann said, "It's with real sadness that we've had to make this decision. Liam and his team accomplished so much for us last season, providing some fantastic memories in a campaign we'll never forget. For that, we're all so grateful." Those words really ring hollow when you've just sacked somebody, don't they? I mean, I'm not having that at all, I'm afraid. They've got a Papa John's game against Bristol Rovers on Tuesday, which Dean Lewington will be in caretaker charge of. He's going to be MK Don's manager at some point, isn't he? Does he get it next?
I think the last time I heard him interviewed, he wanted to do another season, I think, which just seems incredible. I used to play against him way back when, and I used to see him frequenting the same Kingston nightclub, so I've always had respect for him from distance. But yeah, he'll be involved, you would imagine, in the coaching setup. Yeah, they don't mess about MK Dons. So I feel like, you know, he's quite brutal at times, the owner there. But I think you look at the numbers here, you know, the statistics, they've had the most defeats in the league. It's the attacking numbers, really. You know, the lowest XG, 23rd for big chances created, third least average shots per game. Attacking-wise, they're not creating anything. Not scoring, clearly, and Twine coming out of the side, as Clarkie says, is the main reason for that. But
I forgot about him as well. He was there last year, wasn't he?
Yeah. And, like, looking at the list of players they brought in, I don't know how many of these have been available for every game. I mean, Josh Coyote, for example, came in from Rotherham's, hardly kicked a ball. But Louis Barry did well. Ish at Swindon, Bradley Johnson, Nathan Holland, Henry Lawrence, we know from Chelsea, Matt. They're not really bad players. Decent abilities, some of these guys. So the manager has to take a little bit of flack, I suppose, for the drop-off, the size of the drop-off, because it's been alarming, hasn't it? And when you consider it's only, again, as Adrian said, the talisman, Scott Twine, and obviously the best defender, Harry Darling, it's not as if five or six lads have left, but it can happen. It can happen. I remember in my career, you know, when you lose a top player, main goal scorer, it can be a real hindrance if they're not replaced.
All right, we'll have to see who's next in the Don's hot seat and what next for Liam Manning. Next today, we're going to look back at some of the key games from the weekend. Let's begin at the Riverside, where it was a losing start to life as Luton boss for Rob Edwards. But the Carrick Express keeps on rolling. Borough bested the Hatters, courtesy of a stoppage time winner from Matt Crook. Second game in a row that he's done that after he did so against Norwich. They came from behind to win this, Borough. Adrian, last week I was all ready to give you pelters for picking Tuba Akpom, who's been around for about 15 years, as your scouting report. But he's only gone and vindicated it with yet another goal here.
Yeah, they don't have to be just young players. They don't have to be stars of the future, these scouting reports. It's just a closer look at someone that's normally doing well. And he's doing very, very well, Tuba Akpom. And I think I did mention on last week's pod that when you've got Isaiah Jones and Ryan Giles supplying the ammunition from the flanks, it gives you a chance. And lo and behold, Ryan Giles crosses one in. Akpom scores with a header. And that's, you know, that's another goal for him. And I think Giles has created more big chances than anyone else in the Championship this season, 11 at the last count. So he's a really, really important player for Middlesbrough as well. But yeah, this was good, wasn't it? Another comeback. Well, good comeback win. Showed a bit of character. Didn't start the game particularly well, but sort of warmed up from halftime onwards. And, you know, up against a team that's got the new manager and possibly the new manager bounce, I think to win the game and to win the shot count 17-3, it's quite impressive, actually. I thought they were, you know, dangerous from set plays all game. Dale Fry, I think the centre-half, had three efforts. The two centre-halves deserve a lot of praise, Lenihan and Fry, because you know that Luton will go direct with the two big guys up front, Morris and Adebayo, and those two kind of dominated that duel. So they stood up to the examination. And then you've got Isaiah Jones on the right, who loves a dribble. I think he made nine in the game. Couple of them drew fouls from Bell, Amari Bell, who ends up getting two yellow cards and a red. And that ultimately was what made the difference in the game. So, yeah, really good, I think, from Middlesbrough. They're in terrific form. And even though I think they're sat in 12th, would not surprise me if they're in the playoff picture within weeks, really, even by Christmas, because Michael Carrick's doing a terrific job.
Yeah, only 3 points off the top six are Borough. Two questions on Carrick, Clarkey, before we move on. Firstly, he's got Burnley at the weekend. That's his first big test, right? Yeah. And secondly, 10 out of 10 for the touchline clobber. like nice thin black suit jacket, dark green zip up polo neck, smart but casual.
Yeah, he's cut. Yeah, I'd like to think I would try and replicate that kind of vibe if I was a gaffer. Gotta say, better looking now than he's ever been, Michael Carrick, isn't he? I think he's looking ever so handsome on the touchline. But he's looking good, and his team are playing ever so well. As for Rob Edwards, by the way, obviously another pretty good looking gaffer. I think he's just got to find the right balance, hasn't he, between the football he wants to play, but also the football that suits the players at his disposal. And he's also got to adjust here, because he's now managing a Luton team that can't really out-football opposition in the Championship. They have to be aggressive in everything that they do. And I think they maybe overstepped it in this game, maybe touched too aggressive with those fouls. They're a good pressing team, but they've just got to find the right balance moving forwards. He can't take that aggression out of this team, otherwise they won't be effective. But he'll want them to play a little bit more football, I think, moving forwards.
Yeah, his sexy voice might be a bit distracting for the players too. It certainly was for me in his post-match interview. They got Norwich on Boxing Day at home, and also at home this coming Sunday, Millwall. That'll be a quiet night in at the library. Elsewhere, Sam quite rightly felt that the opportunity to be one of the near 13,000 who can say they witnessed Kolo Touré's managerial debut live and in living colour was one that couldn't be spurned. So he trotted off down to the Den to see Millwall and Touré's Wigan share the spoils in a one-all draw. What does a Kolo Touré team look like then, Sam?
Well, it was quite different from what it had been previously, the team that is under Liam Richardson. Yeah, I think the changes were evident straight away. I think he'd only had a week with them, maybe. And on that evidence, it would probably have been heavy tactical work. I'll just give you the little bullet points I scribbled down last night when I was having a beef bourguignon, a cold one at that, in the kitchen. Closed with aggression from the off. So that was really evident. Front players played out. I don't think Wigan have been a possession team in my recent memory, so much so that pushing 60% possession in the first half, and yes, take the opposition into account, Millwall aren't going to have loads of the ball, but that's domination, isn't it? 60%. They were 13th for average possession going into this game, but I would suggest that's, you know, probably jumped up now considering how much of the ball they had. Power and Naylor, their roles in central midfield, not a kind of double pivot, one of them very much joining in with the front players. So it was kind of one sitter and one roaming. I like the rotation from Lang, who started on the right-hand side, but him and Broadhead kind of flip-flopped quite often between the right-hand side and the centre-forward position. So yeah, I think a lot of coaching's gone on there, and they looked a decent side during some real good spells of possession. That said, Millwall didn't play well, but still had the better chances throughout the 90 minutes. Vogelsammer should have scored early on. Bradshaw had a good chance. It was Will Keane who scored a bit fortuitously for Wigan. Had a shot. The goalkeeper dived down to his right and it ricocheted back to him, and he poked it in the other corner. That came actually from down the right-hand side, that Broadhead Lang kind of movement that I was speaking of. And then we had a brilliant goal from Fleming, an outstanding goal, who hardly had a kick in the first half, and you keep seeing him obviously scoring, and he's been a bit of a talisman for them this season, but not involved really, playing as a number 10. You'd expect everything to go through him, completely on the periphery. Millwall's best move of the half, and he scores a brilliantly taken goal. And then in the second half, he was excellent. And I had a look at it, because I think I've seen him a few times. I'm thinking he just doesn't really do a lot. And then all of a sudden, he'll knock one in from 25 yards. But I must not have been paying attention, because he's fourth for shots per 90. In the division, seventh goals per 90. So I think he is working the goalkeepers and getting strikes away. He had a free kick in the second half that was saved, and he looked much more of a top player in the second half. And yeah, it was probably a fair reflection of the game, really. Millwall still lack that focal point. Bradshaw is trying and trying and trying, but he's just not getting the rub of the green. And with Millwall kind of chasing the victory, I just felt sitting there at the Den, it's the first time really where they're putting balls in the box and they don't really have a physical option. There's no Afobe right now. Years gone by, you had Morrison, didn't you? Then you had Matt Smith for a few seasons. I can't remember Millwall not having that kind of plan B when they're going direct and trying to physically batter a team to get that winning goal. So that's where Gary Rowett, we're probably going to say this a few times on today's podcast, that is 100% where he's going to be shopping in January. If they can add that, you know, still got a great chance of making those playoffs.
Yeah, they're 2 points outside of them at the moment are Millwall. As for Wigan and Toure, tough run for them. Next three games, Sheffield United, Middlesbrough and Sunderland.
So I nearly forgot. Sorry, those. Matt. I nearly forgot. I wanted to just paint a picture here. From kickoff, Jake Cooper stood just alongside where the centre was taken. And I'm like, is Cooper playing up front? This is brilliant. Just anticipating the usual shape and all that. Got rolled back. He ran forward into the centre forward's position. And they tried to hit him from the kickoff.
So chip and charge.
Right, yeah. So he didn't take the kickoff, but he ran forward like a centre forward, pinned the centre half, ball went up to him. They lost the header. Wigan so nearly scored. It was like so funny. Obviously, like something they'd worked on. Wigan just played through them. Everyone scampered back. Obviously, Millwall light in defence because they'd lost their centre half, and Long pulled off an amazing save from Broadhead. So it was just a tactic rather than Cooper playing up front, but it was very, very funny.
You've seen a few set pieces go wrong, people trying to base stuff on the Dutch free kick, I think, from the other night. Last week, I said I was obliged to refer to Blackburn v Preston as a Lancashire hotpot. Well, Mother Nature clearly took umbrage at this cliche and dusted said county with snow this weekend as the game at Ewood Park played out in wintry conditions. It was Rovers who froze, though, falling to a 4-1 home humbling by their near neighbours. Clarky, they briefly threatened a fight back, didn't they, Blackburn at 2-1? But from what I saw of this game, which was the majority of it, Preston were worthy winners and scored some lovely goals.
They were pummeled, Blackburn Rovers, in the game. Pretty chasing in 180 minutes, isn't it? Spread out over a month or so. You know, the last game before the break, they were battered at Burnley. And then this was poor. I mean, yeah, there were some good goals, and I think I will praise Preston shortly, but looking at the game, I didn't like the body language, really, of the players. I thought that there wasn't that much desire to sort of get back and track runners. They were caught overplaying really sloppily inside their own half on numerous occasions. They basically didn't look like they'd readied themselves for a full-blooded championship derby, and Preston absolutely had, and that was sort of the mode of their victory. It was sort of aggressive, hostile, fast, and everything they did was really, really efficient, particularly inside the Blackburn Rovers half, where they pressed, won the ball and punished them. It was if you're a Preston fan, a P&E fan, this was as good as it gets, I reckon. And they did it without a number of players. Did you see the list of players that were missing? Robbie Brady, Andrew Hughes, Alan Brown, Emil Reese, Ali McCann and Sean Maguire, all out. They had a bunch of kids on the bench, but you would never have known it. I thought the wing backs were really good, powerful, really good runners. This is why, yeah, I was never a powerful runner. So whenever I was asked to play wing back, I just didn't feel comfortable. I think you've got to be super fit, quick, but also quite a powerful runner to be an effective wing back. And in Potts and Fernandez, they had two players that were very much that at the weekend. And then inside them, Woodburn and Daniel Johnson had brilliant games, scored good goals. Well, Woodburn scored a good goal. And then Chid Evans, the man in form that Sam's been waxing lyrical about for ages, as you know, was at it again, wasn't he? Quality finishing. So yeah, great stuff from Preston. Only 35.6% of possession, but it was a battering, and Blackburn have to sort of, I don't know, not go back to the drawing board, but they've got to be better. I was looking at Rovers, who had that amazing defensive record at home, and I was thinking, are they that good at the back, though? It feels like they rely a lot on Kaminski and that they give up chances. Well, the fact is they do give up a lot of chances. In open play, the third worst expected goals against Blackburn Rovers, bettered or worst only by Rotherham and Hull City. So yeah, when you look at those Blackburn defensive stats, maybe they're fooling us a little bit.
Yeah, they had won six in a row at home before this game, but not great for John Dale Thomason, as you say, Adrian, to lose successive derbies. And let's go into League One. Shrewsbury ravaged by injury and illness ahead of their game with Bolton, but it was the Trotters who were left feeling pig sick after Che Dunkley's injury time winner gave the Shrews the victory here. Last week, our subject of Tweet of the Week, Sam, Rob Street, inspired by that accolade, he notches his first senior goal to give the Shrews the lead just 2 minutes in. Did you see what he tweeted about this?
You're going to tell me.
Nice picture of him wheeling away in celebration. Goal and a big win, exclamation mark. Let's go at Shrewsbury Town. Blue diamond, orange diamond. Lovely stuff from him. Is that who you're going to talk about, or are you on a Che Dunkley kind of vibe this morning?
going to have a nod to him, aren't we, after we inspired this first goal in Salop's colours. And yeah, thinking back to last week and doing a little bit of research, it feels like this has been coming, and he had a lot of nice support on the back of this goal from the fans. So I think he's been doing a lot of unselfish work. And I think it's interesting that front too. Christian Sadie's his partner, who also scored, on loan from Bournemouth, Street on loan from Palace, two young kids doing the business for Steve Cotchell at the weekend. And he's got Bowman in reserve, who came on and that didn't decrease the level of the performance. He did really well. And Tom Bloxham getting a lot of credit as well for his impact off the bench. So a real team performance, obviously. And you saw that with the way that they came back to win this game. I haven't watched Saturday's highlight show as of yet, but it was kind of Bolton getting a taste of their own medicine, wasn't it? Because they've been doing this to teams throughout this season. Well, Shrewsbury, not too bad in that department either. 11 points now they've taken from losing positions. Bolton 13, just a point behind Plymouth, who are the best in that regard. So Shrewsbury are made of stern stuff, always up there, always with set pieces. And I think they're the third best in that regard this season. And yeah, Dunkley was funny, wasn't it? The penalty he gave away was awful. And then he assisted and he got the winning goal as well. I wanted to point out Jack Iredale's pass for the penalty award. Did you see it, Clarkey?
Yeah, but I'm trying, I can't remember it off the top of my head. Go on.
They kind of break up a Shrewsbury attack, yeah, and he comes down the left hand side and he just threads this ball, the weight of it for Afolayan, I imagine it was kind of left up the pitch, who gets taken out by Dunkley. It was a stupendous
Messi like. Can we go that far?
It's not like through the gaps, you know, when it takes out two or three players, but it's just weighted down the side of, I think it was Dunkley or maybe one of the other centre halves. It was a beautiful pass, and Charles sticks away the penalty. But yeah, real team performance, great mentality, and a really good little run that they're on. I think it's just two defeats in eight, and they came against Barnsley and Wednesday by a goal to nil. So they're not going bad, Shrewsbury, at all. So good period for them. Bolton obviously sitting pretty in the league, but it's the eighth time in 10 games that they conceded first and the other two finished 0-0. So, yes, they've been brilliant in pegging back teams and getting points late on, but you can't do it every week, as the game showed at the weekend. And also, I don't know about you, Clarkey, but if I was a manager, I'd never take off a striker with two goals to his name in any game. In any game, when it's in the balance, even if you're 2-1 up, even though the fresh legs of Bodvarsson and Bakayoko are of similar quality, but he took off the two strikers and then they didn't have a shot after the 70th minute. So I think, Ian Everett, on reflection, will regret that decision.
Why do they do it, manager? Why do they do that? It winds me up. And it obviously winds the players up because they got a chance for a hat trick. But you see it so often, don't you? It's almost as if managers don't believe. They think that, oh, they've used up their quota of goals and we'll get some fresh legs on. But I mean, you know this, Sam. If you're on two goals, you're not feeling any tiredness whatsoever, right?
Especially if the game's in the balance.
Yeah.
You know, if you're 4-1 up away from home, no problem. You want to give someone else a game. But yeah, I think they were 2-1 up, weren't they? Going into the latter stages, you arguably keep on your two front players who have had an effect. Afolayan won the penalty, Charles stuck two away. So strange decisions. And I don't think the midfield could get up the pitch because the ball just wouldn't stay in the final third. You know, no shot after those guys came on. So
game state, isn't it? Yeah. Managers have got to read the game state a little bit better sometimes. And that'd be disappointing. Shrewsbury, by the way, only 2 points off the playoffs. Decent season it's turning out to be.
You could see I was going there, but I just pulled back a little bit. You've done it for me, Clarkie. So you can take the stick when they plummet like a stone.
It's all about momentum, isn't it? Shrewsbury say, oh, only 2 points off the playoffs. Pompey on the same number of points. You go, oh, they've slipped to eighth. No game for them this weekend. There was a game at Portman Road, Ipswich and Peterborough. I feel like these are two clubs that you might claim a loose affiliation to, Clarky. I went past London Road on the train on Sunday, so maybe I can do the same. The game was at Portman Road, though. Ipswich won it, as is their want. They're top a point clear of Plymouth. Posh, inexplicably, still in the playoff places, despite this, their eighth defeat in 11 games on the road this season. So Ipswich go top. Can you put forth an argument to say they're not just going to stay there for the rest of the season? Because they look like the best team in the division by some distance, don't they?
They do. The point. They do. Yeah, I think they will be champions. I'm happy to stick my neck on the line for Ipswich. They they got a great squad. They got a quality coach that's in a bit of a groove in terms of selection. I kind of like the way that Kieran McKenna also rotates the strikers. One week it's Freddie Ladapo. I think Freddie Ladapo maybe plays 2 in 3. This time it was Caden Jackson's turn. But Connor Chaplin, I guess, was the star of the show for Ipswich in the game. 2 good goals, 1 header, beautifully timed run into the box to flick a header into the corner, and then the other one came from a corner. And I was looking at some of his numbers across the season so far: 3.8 non-penalty shots per 90 for an attacking midfielder. Let me tell you, that is very, very good. He's fourth in the division behind Jack Marriott, Morgan Whittaker, and Freddie Ladapo. He creates almost 2 chances a game in open play as well, per 90, just Connor Chaplin. So, if he can stay fit and in this kind of form, they've got a shout. What I will say about Ipswich is that they weren't brilliant in this game and that Peterborough gave them a few nervy moments. And I was watching the highlights, I think kind of extended highlights of the game. And every time Peterborough put a ball into the box, they seem to get something from it, either a chance or a knockdown. And, you know, Ipswich don't look convincing defending those. And I'm pretty sure, Sam, we've talked about this before, about Ipswich not being that good at defending high balls. And that is something they will have to work on, because other teams will cotton on. Well, I'm sure they have already cottoned on, and they're just going to float loads of balls into the area and look to win either the first ball or the second ball. So, yeah, that's a bit of a problem. Got to tip my hat to Sonny Aluko. He's been out since August. Came straight in. And I think McKenna said, "Oh, give us 45. And he gave him 80. And he also gave Dan Butler a little bit of a torrid down that side of the pitch, along with Wes Burns. So you've got him as the right-sided attacking midfielder, Aluko. You've got Wes Burns as the right wing-back. And between them, they sort of tag-teamed to give the Peterborough wing-back a real, real tough time. So, that was a good sort of tactical piece of thinking, I guess, from Kieran McKenna. But yeah, as for Peterborough, I mean, terrible away from home, but this actually was an okay performance. They can probably take heart from it.
Yeah, tough place to go, etc. Meanwhile, in League Two, Grimsby and Tranmere met in Lincolnshire. Neither had won in the division since October. It was the Mariners who snapped that run, coming out 2-1 victors here. You can tell me some nice things about them if you like, Adrian, but I'm interested, Tranmere-wise, are they not supposed to be promotion contenders? They haven't won in 10 games in all competitions, and they're firmly mid-table, as are Grimsby, but less happy about it.
They just don't score enough goals, do they? It's been a bit of a weird season, I think, for Tranmere. I mean, in terms of their defensive shape, usually solid. I mentioned expected goals against a little bit earlier on. It's a good gauge, expected goals against, of how solid you are in open play. You know, if you're loose, you're going to give up a lot of chances in open play. If you have tight structure, then you won't give up many. They're the best in League Two, Tranmere, at limiting chances in open play, good chances, but they just don't score enough goals. I think very rarely do they get more than one in a game, and that's a problem. And in this match, actually, the goal they got, I don't know if you saw it, was absolutely gifted. It was one that the striker shouldn't even really claim. The goalie just smacks a clearance straight at him and it goes in.
Definitely shouldn't be celebrating that with gusto, should you? It's got to be a kind of, haha, how embarrassing.
In fairness, he didn't. So yeah, this was a nothing performance really from Tranmere. Well done, Grimsby. I think they're acquitting themselves really good since getting promoted. It is only their second home win of the season, so they kind of needed it. And I've got some numbers on Grimsby that are quite interesting as well. They've only scored more than once. Obviously, they did it in this game 5 times in 20 matches. And then I'll put pressure on your defence if you can only score one a game. Flip it around. They've only conceded more than one in 5 of 20 games as well. So they are unbelievably solid. And I think for a team that's come up from the National League, that's impressive. And I think a lot of it is down to teamwork and sort of almost pressing from the front. They were definitely one of the best pressing teams in the division. They'll hassle the hell out of you. So, keep it going, Grimsby, is the message. John McAtee up front, obviously, he helped them go up. I watched him score in that National League playoff final win. he got snapped up by Luton and they've loaned him back to Grimsby. So it was good to see him leading the line, and he put in a lovely cross for Keenan's diving header, which was a beauty of a goal. But yeah, Grimsby, well done, because across League Two, there wasn't a lot going on at the weekend. So at least they gave us a game we could talk about.
Yeah, I agree with Clarkie. I mean, they're a good side, Grimsby. I think the numbers show that. Obviously, at home, they've been terrible. So if they can add a few more wins there, I can see them climbing the table, honestly, because they're up there in a lot of the statistics attacking-wise. They just haven't got enough finishers, haven't got enough of a goal threat. Clifton's their top scorer with 5. They're second for expected goals for, 3rd for shots, 8th for big chances created. Yet there's been so few goals in their games, actually, collectively, because defensively they're not too bad either. So I think this has got strong, I've said it before, Paul Hurst Shrewsbury vibes about this Grimsby team, which doesn't necessarily need, you know, out and out goal scorers, a plethora of them, but you could do one or two chipping in with a few more, because I think this is a decent side he's put together there.
It's a big club as well. When I went to that final, Grimsby fans everywhere. I mean, I played against Grimsby in the Championship. So, you know, they have the capability, but I'm not saying that they're en route for a journey back up there. But yeah, I agree with Sam. They're on the way up under Hurst.
Yeah, he's a good coach, isn't he? It's good to see him rehabilitate his reputation as well after that unfortunately short spell at Ipswich that he had. Right, that is the weekend review done. Next today comes the scouting report. Sam, you're a man after my own heart this week, aren't you? Because I really wanted to sneak in a mention of the fact that Derby County's big game this season is against Burton Albion, and you've allowed me to do that because Victor Adebayojo is the player who you are focusing on, and he scored his 10th of the season in the East Midlands Derby in the third division.
He did, and I'm not just saying it, I thoroughly enjoyed doing this week. I think this is a really good story. Adebayojo made his debut in the 14-15 season for Orient. And he had a little trial at Chelsea, which I'm sure I was probably covering the development squad at this time, but I don't recall it. I don't remember him from that.
I know, mate.
But he subsequently went off to Cambridge, and obviously we kind of remember him from being at Barnsley and part of that Valerian Ishmael kind of six or whatever he had that he rotated in the front line. And he always did a really good job when I saw him. Sometimes wide. Now, clearly got a manager with huge faith in him, playing down the middle every week, and the confidence is just flowing. He had 12 goals in his career, if I've done my maths correctly, since 14-15. He's got 12 goals this season for Burton in 28 games. He's got 10 in 21 in the league. It's the highest percentage share of any team's goals in the division. So he is talismanic right now. There was a couple of the goals I actually went, oh my God, he has got a right foot like a hammer. There's 3 absolute beauties he scored this season. One against Forest Green, which was a hat trick. One against Charlton, the other one I can't recall, but he's got 3 unbelievable away at Oxford. So he scored important goals against good sides, Oxford, Posh, Charlton, Derby. They've been worth 10 points as well. His goals, something that I've spoken about on the podcast this season, not the 4th in a 4-0 win. He's scoring winning goals, equalising goals. They'd have 6 points, Burton, without his contribution so far this season. And as much as the power that he's got, the ability to run, love his endeavour, closing down from the front, I think they're really enjoying his work right there as well, his ability to hold the ball up. But he's getting the goals in the 6-yard box. He's getting across the near post with aggression, with pace, intelligence as well. I've not, you know, seen that kind of goal scoring nous for him previously. So, listen, he's been linked with Hull already. And they need a striker and they need another option up there. And it would make a lot of sense to me. But, yeah, well done for Burton and Dino Marmaria recognising this, giving him the platform. And he's absolutely thriving. The one other statistic I wanted to give was that he's only had 34 shots and he scored 10 in the division this season. For a bit of comparison, where's the numbers gone? Johnson Clark-Harris and Aaron Collins, the other two most prolific strikers right now, have had double the amount of shots. So he's scoring every 3.4 shots. The other two Johnson Clark-Harris 5.3, Collins 6.2. So he's an all-rounder, I would say. He's not hanging around in the 18-yard box. He's doing a bit of everything for the team. And his conversion rate, very, very good. So listen, I've said it again umpteen times. You do it for a few months these days, you'll get flogged. So someone will probably take a chance on him, because at 24 years old, this is a guy with his best days ahead of him.
Yeah, 20. Yeah, so good. I was going to ask you, how old is he? And yeah, that's perfect age, isn't it? And definitely strikers, 24 to 28, almost all of them. That's their purple patch season. I don't know what Sam's was, but yeah, it's a great age. It really is. Yeah, those numbers are quality. Dino Mamria, by the way, for anyone old enough to remember, was a striker. So you wonder, you know, whether he's worked hard on his game, the gaffer there at Burton.
He's given him some starts. He started 19 games in the league this season. That's more than double what he's ever managed in any previous campaign for any of his other clubs. I love his list of loan stops as well. Royston Town, Hemel Hempstead Town, Heybridge Swifts, Dulwich Hamlet, Soham Park Rangers, Margate, and then Bristol Rovers and Cambridge. Nomadic.
Funny, like,
isn't that we can call him.
Doing that last night, all the Barnsley fans really like him. The stuff I read anyway, he made 18 starts in 5 years at Barnsley. I mean, he must have been showing something, mustn't he, to keep them on side. And yeah, like I said, that season when they got into the playoffs, he was always a real, real good foil for kind of Woodrow and Chaplin, the other lads they had. I thought it was a real good option for him.
How do you stay in a contract for 5 years at Barnsley and only play 18 games? I mean, yeah, I mean,
you must be inconsistently brilliant. Is that a phrase? You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's like they knew he had value. They knew he had some kind of value. So they didn't want to let him go on a free, but they didn't trust him enough to actually use him. It's a weird one.
All right. Well, we've bigged him up. So apologies if we said your name wrong, Victor Adeboye Joe. But yeah, look for him on the move in January, potentially. Now then, Clarky, when you put your choice on the group chat last night, I thought it was a player with a double-barreled surname. But then I looked him up and I realised it was Owen Moxon of Carlisle, not Owen Moxon Carlisle. So clearly I don't know that much about him, but having had a quick look this morning, he's basically the assist king of League Two.
Yeah, he signed in the summer from Annan Athletic, where he'd really done very well. But he's from Cumbria, he's from Carlisle. So
just over the road, that, isn't it, Annan? Mm-hmm. Just over the border.
It is, yes. And he's a local boy. He was born in Carlisle. The fans love him. And what he is, he's not a refined player. I'm not sure he's a player that's going to ever go in the Premier League, maybe not even the Championship. But what he is a real wholehearted League Two player at the moment. He's tall, grafts his nuts off, absolute box to box. He'll try things, passing, and he'll try those long diagonals. They won't always come off. But where he really makes his mark is in two ways. He makes a lot of tackles, fifth most tackles in League Two. So he's got this edge. A few of them are fouls, I've got to say, but he's competitive. But it's inside that final third. He'll just bust a gut to get in there and try and make things happen. And he'll drive from central positions and have shots on goal. Two of his three goals this season have come with 25-yard pile drivers where he sort of surges through the middle to score. The other one was a far post diving header. He's a great set piece taker. He's created a lot of chances from corners and wide free kicks. And often they'll do a short corner, Carlisle, where he takes it, gets it back, and then he'll change the angle and whip in a right footer towards the 6-yard box, and they've scored from a couple of those as well. He's got excellent technical ability. I think he's got 7 assists now in all comps, 6 in the league. And he's just that all action central midfielder that most teams, you know, most fans of most teams want to see. So, yeah, I just wanted to big him up. He's a sort of local hero. And Carlisle are kind of in the mix, aren't they, for promotion this season? And he is absolutely integral to them. If he continues this form, they have a shot at it. They really do. And I think he could be the kind of player that is in the heart of their midfield for a number of seasons. If they went up, I think he'd stay with them and probably be equally as effective at League One. My one quibble, and is this a quibble? Because I think I would do this. Interested to get your thoughts here, chaps. FotMob, who Sam pointed me in the direction of recently, the website, got lots and lots of good stats on there. They tweeted the highest ranked players in League Two last week for the season so far. And young Owen was second on the list behind Sam Hoskins, and Owen retweeted it. That's the last time he's tweeted. So what do we think? I mean, he didn't pass comment. He's just put it out there. Yeah.
I like that. What do you think?
Take it. Yeah. Exactly. Take it. Yeah,
I think so.
Because he's definitely not the second best player in League Two. No.
Exactly.
However they've done those numbers, take that.
Exactly. Are you with me on that? Because he's not a refined player. He looks a League Two player, but he's doing a very, very good job in the heart of that midfield. And do you know what? I'm all for retweeting praise. I know people don't want to do it, but no, if you haven't got an agent or no one's going to sing your praises for you, just put it out there. If there's something out there that says you're doing well, retweet it. I'm happy with it.
All right. Well, in the unlikely event that anybody ever tweets some praise about me, then I will retweet it. But that does move us nicely on.
Every time I've done it, but I will do it sometimes. I just think, sod it. No one else is pushing for me. No one else is singing my praises. Why not? So, yeah, I think Sam's too modest. Sam wouldn't do that, would you?
No, probably not.
Right. Well, listener, look across Adrian's timeline later for when he tweets what a great podcast host I've been.
A video of him lashing a sponge ball past one of his children in the kitchen.
Right. So that scouting report, Owen Mox and Carlisle and Victor Adebayojo. Of Burton. We've spent some time talking about Twitter output already, but obviously we're going to finish with the tweet of the week. It comes from Ryan Giles of Middlesbrough. I feel like these guys are contractually obligated to quote tweet something from the official club account because that is what everybody does these days. Ryan says, great to be back. 3 PTS and another A, and the A is an emoji. It's like red background, white A. A joyful face emoji. Let's keep this momentum, 2 exclamation marks. Great support as always. Enjoy your weekend. Red heart emoji, flames emoji, hashtag up TB. And then he's tagged in Middlesbrough as well. Great to be back, Sam, was the theme of the weekend from Championship tweeters. This weekend, which is fine. Other than that, it's fairly run-of-the-mill, but enjoy your weekend means that he loses several points for me.
There's a lot going on here. I'm thinking reclined, probably pants, flip-flops, towel over the shoulders, probably pre-shower. And there's a lot going on in here, isn't there? So I'm saying that's taken a good 7 or 8 minutes to concoct. I like the A emoji for the assist. But I want to start the assist debate, Clarkie, because I know we include it in our analysis. Yeah. It's not a thing, though, is it? It's not a thing. Because I know it's difficult to judge and it would be difficult to police, but the amount of times I passed the ball 5 yards to someone who then went on a maze or lashed it in from 25 yards, it can't be celebrated in a tweet, I'm afraid. It's a big thing.
What if you stick?
This might not be the time or the place. But
if you're a wing back, Sam. If you're a wing back, Sam, come on, I'm going to stick up for the Wingers Union here. If you're a wing back and you've just dropped a shoulder, whipped a beauty into the box for Tuberapon to nod home, you claim
maybe the game. Maybe we could have, or there could be, a dubious assist panel moving forward. Do you know what I mean? Someone says,
could be a podcast feature.
You towed it to someone 40 yards from goal and then he slalomed beyond 27 defenders. You're not getting the assist. You know what I mean? I do like the emojis. I think it's a blushing emoji, is it not? So maybe he's being a little bit modest there. And then obviously he's done the enjoy your weekend, which is your pet hate. And then he's used the flames emoji, which Clarkie's got shares in. So there's a lot going on here. Some I don't like, some I do. 5 out of 10.
It's either the fire flames or it's the bang emoji for me. I love that one. and on that, by the way, when I was doing my own Moxon analysis, you called him the assist king in League Two. Two of them. One of them was where a defender blasts the ball at him and it hits him and it deflects to somebody. And another one was a 3-yard square pass to someone who lashed one in from 25 yards. So I absolutely take that.
Until they're bringing in trophies for the assist kings at the PFA dinner awards.
They do.
It's not
well, they're now in the Premier League. There's a golden playmaker award in the Premier League.
No.
Yeah.
Well, we need the dubious assist panel then. I need it.
Sorry, I'm just caught up in Owen Moxon's Twitter feed. It's not particularly interesting, but I just feel like he's the new Rob Street and I just want to be right at the vanguard of this. All right, so 6 out of 10 from Sam Clarkey. I'm giving Ryan Giles
an extra 1 now. I think I'll give him a 5. Yeah, I think 5.
Oh, okay, all right. Well, I'll go 6 then, Adrian.
Yeah, it's very much a 6, isn't it? But the thing that caught my eye is from Middlesbrough's original tweet. Obviously, they've used the bang emoji, which I'm all for, but they've got a sponsor. They got a sponsor on the picture.
The Stockton Machine Company Limited.
Sponsored tweets now. It's our times have changed.
What should we speculate as to exactly what they do at Stockton Machine Company? Get it out, Matt.
Yeah, I have. So if you want to have a guess.
No, I'll embarrass myself. We used to stay in Stockton, though, the night before games when we were... probably would have been Hartlepool, wouldn't it, maybe? Or
and they make sewing machines.
They deliver bespoke engineering solutions from machine components to replacement OEM parts. SMC provide cost-efficient, rapid turnaround solutions to industry. But they are not our sponsors. Quimbet are. So we'll mention them rather than some Teesside-based sewing machine manufacturer. A reminder of the offer from our actual sponsors, Quimbet, to coincide with the World Cup. They've enhanced their UK welcome offer where you can now get a free bet worth up to £35. New customers only. Head to www.quimbet.com/world-cup-2022-offer-UK or you just go to quimbet.com/promotions. You can check out the full terms and conditions there. It's 18 plus, and remember, always gamble responsibly. And that is going to do it for us for this edition of What the EFL. Adrian, Sam, thank you very much for your time as ever. We'll catch up with everybody again next week. You know what? I literally legitimately nearly said enjoy your week or have a great week or something. It's infected me. Just go away and go about your business for a few days, and we'll speak to you again next week. Bye.